It's state budget time in Wisconsin, and with a second public hearing tonight at Lambeau Field in Green Bay, the budget happens once every 2 years. It sets the course for just about everything that happens with taxes and public services, and it's our lead topic in this edition of the State Capitol Report. I'm Rob Ferret, filling in for Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Sean Johnson is here with me. He's our state government reporter here at WPR, and he lives for this stuff. Sean, it's good to see you again.
Good to see you, Rob.
Well, how big a deal, before we get to the hearings in particular, am I overstating it? The state budget, it's a big deal.
The state budget's a big deal, yeah. Yeah, definitely. You get me, I was telling you, it's like the most excited I've been about the state budget, listening to your billboards there. But
well, we're both nerds, though.
It's a big deal, and these hearings are... you know, they're part of the process every couple of years. People get up there and they have 2 minutes to say their piece and really very little more. And get up there and just kind of run through their issues. And at the last hearing, this is something we haven't seen before, but legislators really didn't ask any questions. They had a mutual agreement between Democrats and Republicans to listen and, you know, just let people go one to the next.
Okay, so people came in, spoke their piece, and then thank you, next.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Move on to the next one.
Well, this always seems to happen with the budget. One of the big issues, and there isn't really a pocketbook issue, a taxes and spending issue, it's this residency requirement, mostly affecting Milwaukee, not just Milwaukee, though. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, that was because you had this first public hearing in Greendale near Milwaukee. Mm-hmm. This was, as far as testimony goes, sort of the preeminent issue in that first hearing. And what the governor's budget would do is something that the Milwaukee Police and Fire Associations, the police and fire unions over there, have wanted for many decades. And it would end the requirement that you have to live in the city of Milwaukee if you want to work for the city of Milwaukee. You know, this is something that the police and fire unions have unsuccessfully bargained over in the past. This time around, the governor would give it to them in his budget. And so you had a lot of people speaking, a lot of members of the police and fire unions speaking in favor of that, police in particular. One of them was Joy DeCristoforo. She's a police officer, and her husband is a Milwaukee policeman. And she actually said that they won't have kids as long as they're forced to live in the city.
I don't believe that we should be forced to live next to the very people that we serve for the very reason that it's a possibility that we have arrested these folks.
And, you know, I guess I didn't realize before this hearing kind of how what a hot emotional issue this could be, because you really had quite a few people get up there and testify along the lines of, you know, how much they wanted this ended. You also had people get up there and testify about, you know, how much they worried about what would happen if you ended this requirement. And one of those was Milwaukee resident Ryan Rice. He says he lives in a nice neighborhood and pays high taxes to support officers' salaries. He's worried what's going to happen if you have a mass exodus of officers who are basically his neighbors right now.
As a Milwaukee taxpayer, I pay probably higher taxes than anyone in the state. A lot of this money goes to their salaries and benefits. I'm willing to pay that. What I ask in return is that they stay in the city to help bolster my neighborhood.
But I would say, though, that, you know, this is largely a dispute between the city of Milwaukee, and the city of Milwaukee police. And it was mentioned at the hearing that this is, Milwaukee Alder said this is an issue of payback, because the Milwaukee Police and Fire Associations are some of the rare unions that endorsed the governor in his 2010 campaign and in his recall campaign. And so, they feel like here's the governor, giving back something that they wanted. I would say, though, that it's not just something that would affect the city of Milwaukee. Mm-hmm. It is a statewide issue, and that's something that was stressed by, the president of the Village of Greendale, who spoke to lawmakers, and he said, this is a home rule issue. It's long been a home rule issue, and it should stay that way, because we have a requirement that you have to live 15 minutes from our town in case there's an emergency. The people of Greendale and other cities or villages expect this. This is not a place for state government to meddle.
Clearly, a local community's ability to control employment conditions and its own response needs has long been and should remain a state constitutional home rule right.
Do you think there's going to be any pushback from the legislature on this residency issue?
Yeah, there already has been some by Republican Senator Glenn Grothman. He's been one of the outspoken opponents of this. You know, he's concerned about what happens when you take away sort of these anchors of the community, you know, like a police officer from, you know, if suddenly there's a mass exodus of them from the city of Milwaukee, what does that do to a community? So he's on the Joint Finance Committee. He's assistant majority leader in the Senate. And, you know, the fact that it does affect communities statewide, we'll see what that means as far as other votes.
Rob Ferret talking to state government reporter Sean Johnson on this edition of the State Capitol Report, mostly talking about our state budget in Wisconsin. What would you say at these hearings if you had the chance? You can call by the end of the half hour at 800-642-1234. You could also share your thoughts. What would you tell these public hearings on the state budget if you were there? Go to our Facebook page, the Joy Cardin Show Facebook page. Share your thoughts there. Now, Sean, there were, of course, some taxes and spending issues coming up in these public hearings, a big part of the budget. We've had a long process trying to deal with transportation funding in Wisconsin. Where does the money come from and where should it go? What came up in the first hearing on that?
Again, since this was the hearing that's closest to Wisconsin's largest urban area, the issue of transit came up. Transit was cut, fairly deeply in the last budget, in this budget.
Public transit. We're
public
talking about
transit, yeah, so bus funding. Mm-hmm. And so in this budget, funding is held flat for it. So these transit systems who felt like, you know, their services are suffering after the last budget aren't really getting a respite here. Also, you know, this might not sound like a big deal, but transit funding is being pulled out of the state's transportation fund in the governor's budget and put into the general fund. And so what has transit advocates worried about there is that it will be competing against school funding or healthcare funding or any other number of politically popular issues, and it could lose out over the years. So you did have some people testify about basically trying to make the link between transit and jobs. And one of those people was a woman named Maripat Monahan of Wauwatosa. She says her daughter relies on public transit to get around and recently lost her job because her bus service was frequently late.
I beg of you to please don't discount the importance of public transportation for so many people that, guess what, don't have a car and can't afford one, quite frankly. So thank you.
Thank you.
And next time when you have these great sessions, think about putting them on a bus line where someone who needs transportation could come.
So that was one of those issues where you hear about the geography of these hearings and where you put them. And there are, you know, Milwaukee lawmakers who said if you actually want to hear from the people of the city, have it closer to downtown or near bus lines so they can get there.
And how many more hearings are there? We've got the one tonight in Green Bay that we've mentioned. What else is down the road?
Well, Democrats just scheduled a bunch of them, but those are good. I think you could more accurately call those listening sessions held by Democratic lawmakers. There are a total of four hearings. And so you've got this one tonight, today in Green Bay. You've got another one coming up this week in Wisconsin Dells at the Kalahari Resort. And then there's one more after that.
They could have some fun with that, a budget hearing on a water slide. The master blaster, perhaps.
There you go. You know, throw ideas in there, and if they float, they get to stay in the budget.
We'll get to education funding in just a couple moments. Sean Johnson is with me. He's our state government reporter here at WPR. I'm Rob Ferret, filling in for Joy Cardin. It's the State Capitol Report on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Rob Ferret filling in for Joy Cardin here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Today's weather, cloudy with periods of light rain, highs in the 40s. Tonight, still cloudy, still that chance of light rain with temperatures steady in the 40s. Tomorrow, highs from 45 to 52, lows 25 to 32. Coming up in our next half hour, Wisconsin's Conservation Congress is holding meetings in every county of the state later today. We'll talk about the 99 issues, probably not all of them, but the 99 issues that are coming up there and some of the controversies in front of the Conservation Congress. Right now in the State Capitol Report, Sean Johnson is here, our state government reporter, mostly focusing on the state budget, Governor Walker's budget proposal. We had a first public hearing last week near Milwaukee, another one tonight in Green Bay. Sean, education funding, of course, it's often the elephant in the room in the state budget. It's a big part of what we spend our money on here. And of course, these public hearings are no exception. What was the talk about Governor Walker's budget when it comes to education?
Yeah, I can't think of a budget cycle over the last decade where there hasn't been a lot of talk about education funding. It's just the biggest driver of the state budget. You know, we spend more on that than we do on anything else. And it's something that people can relate to. Everybody's got a school in their home community. And so one of the trends you saw at the hearing last week is you had some suburban school districts in strongly Republican counties where the superintendent came up and testified and said, look, we've embraced the Walker tools, you know, using the new freedom they have under Act 10 to reduce teacher benefits in order to balance their budgets. But at the same time, they said this budget doesn't do enough, because what it does in terms of state funding is it essentially holds funding to schools flat because of what it does with revenue limits. If they want to increase their funding per pupil, they have to go to a local referendum. And so one of the schools that spoke out against this was the Kettle Moraine School District in Waukesha County. Superintendent Patricia DeKlotz told lawmakers that you know, if this budget goes through as it stands right now with the increased funding for private voucher schools but the flat funding for public schools, it will damage great schools.
We are high-achieving, low-spending, and innovative. We have 3 charter schools and an advanced manufacturing certificate to meet the skills gap. We are redefining education, and there are great schools like us across the state. The proposed budget feels like a sledgehammer when what we need is a surgeon's scalpel.
And there's been some pushback on this, not just from Democrats, but from a couple important Republican legislators saying we want a different budget plan. What's going on with that?
Yeah. And you heard all the superintendents, it seemed like, who got up and said we need more money. They were talking about they spoke in support of this proposal by State Senators Mike Ellis and Luther Olson that would increase the amount the schools could spend per pupil by $150. So details of that proposal are, kind of in short supply right now, but I think you could expect those to come out in the next couple months as the legislature votes on this thing.
So, I mean, one assumption might be Republican Senate, Republican Assembly, Republican Governor, this is going to be a cakewalk.
Mm-hmm.
There may be some issues that aren't so easily resolved.
Maybe, because you have to remember, it's been quite a few years of fairly challenging budgets for schools now. I mean, Governor Doyle's last budget, they increased the amount that a school could spend via local property taxes on students, but they had education cuts for the first time. Governor Walker's first budget had the deepest education cuts that we've ever had in Wisconsin. And now you have another budget here where they're essentially holding funding flat. Schools will tell you our expenses go up. And so that over time, I think lawmakers are hearing about it. Whether or not they change it, we'll see.
We have a caller who wants to bring up another issue from the hearings. George is with us from Milwaukee. Hi, George.
Yes, hi. There were quite a few people who spoke at the hearing on Thursday about the possibility of initiating more alternatives to prison. Wisconsin's prison population has doubled in the last 12 years, and there are programs now there's one that's being offered by a number of large-scale religious organizations that's called 11 by 15, which hopes to reduce the prison population in half within 3 years. And the first idea I think that they have is that they would like to see much more money diverted into drug and alcohol courts that could basically help reduce the prison population and get people into alternative treatment that works better, has less recidivism. And I'm wondering if Sean could talk about what he sees as the possibility of more money going in for something like this.
Yeah, and it's like you read my notes, because that was coming up next. That was another one of the themes, and I would say this is why these public hearings are sometimes interesting to attend, because this is not something that's sort of been a driving discussion behind this budget. You haven't heard lawmakers really from either party hammering that issue home as something that needs to happen or doesn't need to happen. It's kind of been you know, it's only been these other groups that have been driving that discussion, and there were quite a few people who spoke in favor of alternatives to incarceration at the hearing. They also talked about the need for something Wisconsin has called a transitional jobs program, and this is basic government subsidized jobs at private employers, you know, where somebody who can't find work somewhere else, isn't on W-2, just wants to get some kind of work history, can take advantage of this. And one of the guys who said that he did that was a gentleman named Brian Osai. He lost his job in 2008 and was later arrested. And after he came out of jail, he wanted to improve his life, found one of these transitional job programs, and, you know, essentially stuck with the place where he was hired part-time.
It allowed me to walk honorable in front of my daughter. You know, she don't have to worry about her dad going to jail for robbing somebody or selling drugs, you know. So I'm very thankful for transitional jobs, and for those of you who are behind it, I thank you. And for those of you who are not behind it, I ask that you commit to it.
So I can tell you with transitional jobs what's happening. That program that we have in Wisconsin now started in 2010. It's going to be phased out at the end of June. So that is going away, and it's going to be replaced in the governor's budget by a Milwaukee-specific program called Transform Milwaukee Jobs. So that's the transitional, you know, employment. As far as alternatives to incarceration, I think advocates are asking for somewhere between $25 and $75 million in new state money, and that's, you know, I think anybody who's watching the budget deliberations will tell you that's going to be a challenge for them because, I mean, you look at all the competing needs here. Schools are saying we need more money. There's some pretty big issues with the way the state is funding Medicaid and what state's going to do there. The governor still wants to have some kind of a tax cut. Some Republicans want a deeper tax cut. And so you have all these competing interests. They don't want to have a structural deficit, you know. So any program that wants new money is going to have to kind of go through those issues first.
Something's got to give.
Right.
Sean Johnson is with us, WPR state government reporter. It's our weekly state capital report. We've got a few more issues to get into before we're done. Sean, one more set of testimony, anti-smoking groups.
And this is another one of those. And I think every budget hearing I've ever been to over the past decade, there's been a presence by anti-smoking groups say we need more funding for this or close a tax loophole. And they want to close with now what they see as preferential tax treatment for these like their candy cigars. Little candy cigars, and one of those issues that isn't necessarily on lawmakers' radar, but I think if you were at the hearing, you noticed all these people that were testifying.
Before we move on from the budget, do you get the sense that legislators listen at these public hearings? Do they do anything?
Off and on. It's harder to gauge where they're at when they're not asking questions for a 10-hour hearing, or however long it was, I guess about an 8-hour hearing last week. It's really harder to read them that way. And, you know, they're not always up there all the time. Sometimes an issue will stick. I mean, there was several budgets ago now, but funding for autism treatment in Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. You had parents of autism come up and testify, and it seemed to get legislators' attention. I don't know if something like residency would get their attention, all the officers that came up and spoke. But, you know, generally, I don't know that a lot has changed at these public hearings.
Let's spend a few minutes, our last few minutes, on some election-related news. We had the statewide elections, state DPI director, state Supreme Court. The incumbents both won handily in both of those races, but there's been some follow-up, especially on from some of the court races. Just give us some of your take on what's happened since those elections.
Well, I think, you know, you look at the elections, and as far as the parties go, the Republicans have now done pretty well in the modern age of statewide Supreme Court races. I mean, I think you could kind of consider the first one of those really happened in 2007, where you had these big money races come in and more partisan races. Out of the five races we've had since then, Republicans have won four of them.
And the Republican-supported nonpartisan candidate.
Yeah, right, yes. And Justice Rogensack being the Republican-supported nonpartisan candidate in the last election, who was supported by the state Republican Party. So,
right.
I mean, that veil is getting thinner and
thinner
all the time.
Yeah.
But Republicans have done very well. She won all but eight counties. You know, she won Milwaukee County. So if you're a Democratic-supported candidate, you lose Milwaukee County, you're in trouble.
Mm.
Republicans, likewise, they have not figured out how to win that state superintendent race. And they haven't invested the same kind of capital they have in the Supreme Court races. But Don Pridemore only won those Washington, Waukesha, Ozaukee counties, which are deeply
the sure thing, Republican
sure thing,
counties.
Kind of like the Dane County for Democrats, mm-hmm. you know. And But Tony Evers did very well in that race. As far as fallout goes, had an interesting development in Dane County. One of the governor's appointments for a circuit court judge over here was turned away by voters. And afterward, the governor said he's probably not going to appoint any more, or he may not appoint any more judges in Dane County.
Probably doesn't make a lot of sense to try and go through that appointment process to make someone who's a good judge or a good lawyer be in a position like that. It just doesn't make any sense to drag people through that. And so I think in the future we may look at just allowing positions to be open until there's an election again.
It's not heavily precedented, is it?
No. I've been talking to a former Supreme Court Justice Jeanine Gieske, who is an appointee of Republican governors for her, first for a county judge judgeship and then for the Supreme Court. She said she's never heard of this before, and that the governor actually has a constitutional obligation to appoint these judges. You know, he kind of walked that back a little bit and said he could maybe appoint retired or reserved judges to those positions, knowing that they're not going to run for election for them.
And then a brief look at next year's election in 19 months, mm-hmm. a challenger to a Republican.
Pretty big deal. Republican Senator Dale Schultz, the lone Republican to stand up to some of Governor Walker's big agenda items. So collective bargaining, he's the only Republican senator to vote against that. And then the mining bill, mm-hmm. the only Republican senator to vote against that. He's going to get a primary from a sitting Republican state assemblyman, Howard Markline, which, it shows that it's probably going to be organized.
Plenty to talk about over the next year and a half leading up to that election.
Indeed.
Sean Johnson, thanks for joining us as always. That's Sean Johnson. He's our state government reporter here at WPR. The State Capitol Report continues after the news. I'm Rob Ferradine for Joy Cardine here on the Ideas Network.